Welcome to It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Coplin. Featuring stimulating in-depth interviews with special guests from all areas of the arts. And now, here's your host for It's a Question of Balance, Ruth Coplin.
Show where we balance the intellectual with the creative, exploring whether we have more in common than divides us through thought-provoking conversations. For the topic hour, I go out and about and talk to people on the street about a wide variety of different subjects. And for this, the Arts Hour, I interview local, national and international guests from all areas of the arts. And I combine a debate topic with an arts interview because a field discussion and creativity are two of the most vital ways we engage with the world. As part of my coverage of the 2017 Cinequest Film Festival in Silicon Valley, this week I'm featuring the film Actors Anonymous, which had its world premiere at Cinequest. I'll be talking to film producers Chris Abernathy and Tim Astor and lead actor Jake Robbins. Actors Anonymous is based on the book by James Franco and also stars the actor along with Scott Hayes and Jake Robbins. James Franco's story reveals how unglamorous the acting world can be. The film shows the underbelly of Los Angeles from the particular perspective of two young men following acting as their career in Hollywood who become friends at an acting class. Both are struggling with inner demons and some bad life choices which come to the fore as they try to inhabit the acting parts they're playing. As their lives intertwine with a beautiful young actress played by Emma Rigby and a famous actor played by James Franco, the film considers what success in art and in life really means. And the public image of Hollywood is very glamorized, and we don't really see all the people who never hit the big time and what they might have done in order to try to make it, and or how committed they are to their art. So the film is interesting in that way, and I was fortunate to attend the world premiere and found the film very engaging, albeit uncomfortable at times as the characters do go to some dark places. And the film is a co-production of Elysium Bandini and USC. Elysium Bandini is a studio created to support emerging artists. I caught up with film producers Chris Abernathy and Tim Astor at Cinequest in the iconic California Theatre in San Jose, and also spoke to lead actor Jake Robbins. But first, let's hear my conversation with Chris and Tim. I'm here at Cinequest with Chris Abernathy and Tim Astor, who are producers on the film Actors Anonymous, which had its world premiere here at Cinequest. So maybe first you could tell listeners, Tim, a short synopsis of what the film's about.
Sure. Actors Anonymous is about a couple of actors who moved to Los Angeles trying to make it in the big bad city and kind of fall in together in their various misadventures along the way.
And it's based on the short stories of James Franco, is that correct?
That's correct. It's a kind of a memoir slash short stories that kind of came together in a script that was created through collaboration with USC and Elysium Bandini.
Okay, so Elysium Bandini is a collaboration between Rabbit Bandini, which is James Franco's production company, and the Art of Elysium charity, is that right? And then USC, this is the film program, is it?
That's correct, yeah, the production program at the School of Cinema.
Okay, so it's somewhat unusual how this film has been made compared with, you know, most feature films. So I'm wondering, Chris, maybe you can tell us a bit about how it came about, because I know when the credits roll, there's sort of 12-ish directors and a lot of writers. Yeah, there's a lot of people working on it. So how is the film made?
Well, first it starts out, you have like the writers, it's almost like a writer's room, what they have. So they have, was it 11 writers? Mm-hmm. 11 writers in the program, and James and one of the professors, John Watson, they took his book and they kind of adapted that, and people would take specific scenes and they would write those, and they took that for a whole semester. And then once the fall semester rolled along, they went into production. So we had the 11 directors on there, and it was split up chronologically kind of where they would take over.
So for those of us who don't know what a writer's room is, how does that work? I mean, I know a lot of shows on TV especially are written in that way, but it's not so common with feature films to do it like that, is it? So how did that work?
No, yeah, definitely very different for feature films. I feel like a feature film, you've got one or two people and they're kind of in their dungeon working away, whereas this, people were trying, you know, specific scenes, or they'd say, we're having a lot of troubles with this, why don't you take that scene? So they kind of work on that and then elaborate on that. It's a pretty good method, as long as it doesn't become too diluted.
Yeah,
I think that's probably your biggest fear.
So was any of the writing done through improvisation with the actors, or was it all done in this writer's room model?
Sure, quite a bit of it came on set, as it often does. Through, you might find a particular line doesn't work once you're out there shooting it, so it's really got to be personal from the actor's point of view. So a lot of that does happen, a little bit of flexibility when you're on set shooting.
And I think also once you cast, like, the actors kind of make that character who they are. Like, mm-hmm. We didn't necessarily know that it was going to be Jake Robbins when they wrote it, so he kind of comes in and gives his personality to it. So a lot changed because of that as well.
It's an interesting creative process. I mean, it is just so different from when a screenwriter has just spent, you know, however much percentage of their life working on a piece of art. I mean, I think they're both equally valid and equally effective, but it is a very collaborative process, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, are you talking about the writing specifically?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good way also for young writers, because it gives them more opportunity to write different scenes and try different things, so they could, you know, just have the experience of maybe this scene will work, or get critique back or criticism from their, you know, fellow students.
Yeah.
So I think that helped a lot too.
Now, I understand you both are previous USC students, so maybe Tim first, when did you graduate and what did you study there?
I actually found out that I had the job before I graduated, just before I graduated. So I started working on it about a month or two before I graduated, and then continued on after I got my master's at the program,
okay.
The School of Cinema.
And it's master's in?
Film and television production.
Okay. And is that the same for
exactly.
you?
Yeah, yes. Exact same program as Tim. We took a lot of the same courses.
Okay. Now, I have friends who are successful producers in Hollywood. One who's an independent producer of note. I've asked him three times what a producer does. He has told me each time, and I don't know if it's just my mind can't retain it, or whether it's just so amorphous and different in different cases that I can't grasp it. How would you describe being a producer?
I would describe it as everything is your fault, everything is your problem. Anything that it takes to get the film done is your responsibility as the producer, and that's really the end-all be-all.
Right, okay. Do you have, is that what
Yeah,
you
I was going to say, like, the cut and dry is your job is to make the movie happen. It's our job is to take this script or idea, more so even that, coming up, taking the idea and showing it to people at festivals like Cinequest or something like that.
Yeah.
And whatever it takes to actually do that, you've got to do that. If that's, you know, closing an actor's contract or taking out the garbage, like, everything is your problem. Everything's your responsibility.
Sometimes that's as simple as hiring crew and, you know, finding the right people to collaborate with.
Yeah.
And other times it's just tremendous problem solving. We've had this obstacle. We have no money left. Well, how are we going to solve it?
Yeah.
And finding a location, you know, all of that stuff kind of falls under our umbrella.
Wow, that's a wide remit. So that's probably why I don't know what it is, because I imagine it probably differs from project to project.
Absolutely. Yeah, you never know what you're going to be doing from day to day. And that's kind of the interesting, fun thing about it.
So what happens when there's more than one producer? Do you just work together like a management team or whatever to see who will do what?
Sure. To some extent, we kind of divided responsibilities early on, and we sort of knew that this would be my umbrella and this would be Chris's umbrella. But then things come up, and sometimes you kind of defer to one person's expertise, and sometimes it's just my day to do the groundwork. So we just kind of figured it out. It was actually a really great collaboration. We sort of are on the same wavelength as far as, you know, working hard and, you know, always doing what's best for the movie.
Yeah. It's quite a difficult subject matter, this film. I mean, it's a really good film. I really liked it. And it shows this underbelly of Los Angeles, and particularly the life of being an actor, which, of course, for a lot of people is very glamorized. But, you know, we don't really see all those people who never make it and what they might have tried to do in order to make it. What made you decide to do this story?
Yeah, it's sort of the anti-La La Land. What made me decide to do the story? you know, the opportunity to work with James Franco, the opportunity to work with a bigger budget project. The fact that when the writers' room came together, they really the book Actors Anonymous is sort of this weird collection of thoughts and ideas. And when the script came together, and it really was this kind of coherent, interesting story. That was sort of the inspiring thing about the project to, that made us want to jump on board, I think.
And it's also, it's one of those things, like, if you're a student, you've always done short films. So as you're trying to pitch your stuff, people are always like, oh, that's great, you know, but have you done a feature? It's a different animal. And at least this way, it gives us the opportunity to have, you know, completed a feature and to kind of show that you can do this. And it's also, it's good for yourself because there's a lot of, there's more stamina, I think, you need to finish. We shot for 24 days. Versus a short film where you're, you know, a handful.
Yeah. Yeah, especially right after school, to knock your first feature out that quickly is, it was a great opportunity.
So do you think it's quite important for universities with film programs to try and present these opportunities in order for their graduates to actually be able to move on in the industry?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, the best thing you get is just working and trying to do this stuff. And, like, a lot of producing, like Tim was saying, is problem solving. And the reason an experienced producer is more valuable is because they've just seen more problems. They've been able to just do things multiple times. And, you know, just the more experience you get is so much more helpful.
Yeah. And I would imagine also you build up connections and contacts in the industry over time, which might help with some of those problems too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's they call it show business, but it's also show friends. The people that you know and the connections that you make definitely ease the path as you go down further down the road.
Yeah. I like to ask my arts guests who come on the show whether they can remember the first piece of art of any kind, whether it was a book or a photo or a film, where they realized for the first time that, or were affected deeply on an emotional level rather than just being entertained. I don't know what might spring to mind for either of you.
I actually had the most random one. I was 5 years old, and I still remember this, and it's probably not a film festival answer, but I was watching Milo and Otis, and I remember they, like, got back to their family, and I remember going to my mom crying. I'm like, Mom, I don't understand why I'm crying. I'm so happy. And she's like, well, sometimes when you're really happy, you cry. And, like, that was the first time I've actually had that emotion. It was so cool that a movie brought that out in me.
Right.
And that's, I mean, that's kind of what cinema can do.
Yeah. Tim, any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those things that's kind of always there. I figure there's kind of two kinds of people. Ones that watch something great and go, wow, that was really great. I really enjoyed that. And another person that will watch that and go, I want to do that. And I think we've always been the, I want to do that. I want the reins on something like that.
Yes.
To be able to affect people like that.
Yeah, no, that's a good answer, actually. I'm also interested in how art can help people to process difficult events, whether they're maybe things that have happened to them themselves or things that they've witnessed, whether there's a healing effect to art. Obviously, in this film, there are some, you know, very difficult emotional elements to it. I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on that, whether both making art and experiencing it can have any healing effect in that way.
Ooh, the catharsis of art. Yes. I think it goes both ways, and you definitely have to ride that line because it can be overly traumatic to relieve certain things. I mean, our film deals with rape, it deals with trauma, it deals with, you know, a lot of things that aren't necessarily very savory, and we're not necessarily dealing with it in a, you know, here's a way to move past that type of a way.
Right, yes.
But that is definitely the role of art a lot of times is to allow us, if nothing else, to say, like, this is what it means to be human, and you're not alone in what you're dealing with right now.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. And I mean, I wasn't trying to say that people necessarily make their art specifically to do that. Like, you know, obviously, I don't imagine you made this film to do that, but it has those elements, as you said. Yeah. What about you?
No, I mean, I agree with a lot of what Tim was saying. I mean, that's all.
Yeah. There's often a tension between commerciality and pure art. How do you, and being producers, you know, there's some or a lot of eye on the bottom line. So how do you approach that with projects?
Oh, yeah. I mean, historically, it's been there forever. You wouldn't have the Renaissance if you didn't have the Medicis and the big banking that was kind of exploding, the commerce that was exploding at the time. So it's always kind of been hand in hand. So I think it always needs to be a balance between being true to what you really want to get across and just the realities of the production. I mean, we didn't necessarily have a huge budget on this one. So we had to deal with that in creative and interesting ways. And I think Chris and I's philosophy during this was to not let the problem define the story, but to be creative enough to not just get around the issue, but make the film better because that there were limitations.
Right. Yeah. And what are you hoping for the film? I mean, obviously, it's just had its world premiere. It's, I imagine, going to do a round of other festivals. What would you like to see for the film?
I think the root of it, the best thing is for all of these young filmmakers to actually get to festivals, see what's going on, see, you know, how to take a movie and learn from this. So when they do their next film, they've already got this experience, you know, established. That's so much of it. And also, we'd also want to get some kind of distribution on it. Like with, between Elise and Bandini, it's like getting somebody to market it or get it on Netflix or something like that, I think would be really cool for everybody to see, wow, my first movie, I can actually have my parents watch that, or I can turn on Netflix or something like that and watch it.
Yeah.
And they should. It's a really interesting experience.
Yes.
And an experiment that Elysium and USC kind of created. And I think that's worth watching and kind of seeing where they took it.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. And I was going to say, I mean, in no way watching it would you have any idea that it had been made by students. I mean, I know they're students in their final year or whatever, so they're obviously, you know, quite advanced in a master's program. But there's no sense of it not being a commercial Hollywood film. I think the standard of in every way, with the script and the acting and the cinematography, are all outstanding, and it really comes together really well. So, yeah. Well, thank you so much for talking to me.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Nice to meet you.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my arts guest this week from the film Actors Anonymous. Thanks again there to Chris Abernathy and Tim Astor. Next, I'll be talking to lead actor from Actors Anonymous, Jake Robbins. We're going to a break now, but I'll be back with more conversation with Jake Robbins after the break.
Ciao, I'm Luca from Tramonti at 528 Seabright Avenue, steps from the ocean. We are the authentic Italian pizza and pasta restaurant, serving also organic salad and house-made dessert in a friendly family-style atmosphere, indoor or on our lovely patio.
Tramonti is open every day from noon to 9 and later on Fridays and Saturdays. Come enjoy our specials every Tuesday neighborhood night and the best deal for a healthy bite at lunch every day.
We bake our bread and prep our fresh pasta and pizza daily. Beppe, Daniel and I want to say grazie to the Santa Cruz community for supporting us in the past 2 years. Allora, buon appetito!
Visit Luca and Beppe at Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue. That's Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue.
Can you imagine living without stress, anxiety, or fear? And can you imagine a life filled with harmony and inner peace? Is that even possible? The Ananda Yoga and Meditation Center in Scotts Valley offers simple tools to help you become more effective at work and more centered in the face of life's challenges. At Ananda, we offer yoga classes for everybody, inspiring workshops, devotional chanting, and Sunday services based on the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda. Our teachers and therapists are highly trained professionals who work together to inspire a healthier you. And your first Ananda yoga class is always free. Visit us at anandascottsvalley.org or call 338-YOGA. That's anandascottsvalley.org or 338-YOGA.